myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
Yeah, so Tom Ryan, the new Director General of Conan, did his first media day on Tuesday. I didn't go because they were only offering group radio sessions, great radio interviews rather than sessions, so I didn't see any point in going. But like, I mean, it was covered extensively what he was talking about. Nothing radical, nothing kind of earth-shattering coming from Tom, nothing ridiculous coming from him either. So it was just like a safe, kind of sure opening to the media. This is someone who's coming from a finance background in the GEA and kind of trying to prove himself as a Gael.
Yeah, and listen, he's not going to get the job in the first place. We've established this already by coming in and offering all these radical changes. He's coming at it from very much, not, I don't want to say like a GEA background, but he is looking at what's going to wash with them. And you can see it in some of his language. He talks about coaxing and cajoling people. Like, so he knows how to sort of work, not work the system, but just knows how he's going to work and what is going to go down with the GEA. He can't just come in and say, you're going to do it this way, and that's it.
Well, that's the thing, and that's the interesting one. One of his quotes pulled out, and he said, I learned very much when I came in 10 or 11 years ago, and that's as Director of Finance. It's not the case that you can just decide this is what we're going to do and everybody does it. You can decide this is what we're going to do now, and then you enter into a prolonged period of coaxing and cajoling and convincing people to do it. And that just sums up the GEA. Like, I mean, you can be as radical as you want, and even the Directors General, Pádraig Duffy, couldn't get stuff through Congress. So, the whole system is very, very frustrating. I'm just wondering, for people who do try to make change, like the CPA, how demoralising it is to go to Congress and get that thrown back in your face. And do you want to come back to Congress again with something else? And at what point do you just go, I'm just going to take my wages here, I'm not interested in this. This is not, you know what I mean? It's just a very, very frustrating thing. But there's just a few different things that he spoke about. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I'm not sure people listening to podcasts really care about the politics of the GA. I'll be honest with you, I'm not passionate about it either. I'm passionate about the games. I'm not too...
You're fighting a good fight though every single week.
Yeah, but still, I suppose there's things that get my wick up. But like the new Director General, the only thing I care about is championship structures. Everything else I don't get frustrated about. This is the one thing that really riles me up.
But you don't let us talk about championship structures either, so it's a very tough
so anyways,
place to be.
He's talking about club fixtures, and he talks about redressing the balance, and it's very obvious he was going to say that. What he's going to do about it is the next thing. So he says it's very, very difficult for us here in Croke Park to ordain to Limerick versus Cork what their fixture programme should be and monitor it. The GEA is built from the ground up. Now, that's historically the GEA is built from the ground up. I don't think that always has to be the way, but this is what he says. The GEA is built from the ground up, and that does entail significant amount of local authority and local control. Of course we have a role, but I think where real change can be affected is locally. But that change is not happening locally. So that's why I want Croke Park to take a lead on this. And you really want the Director General to take a lead on this. So just saying that the GEA is built from the ground up. There's one thing I always hate in any line of work, and that is the attitude, well, that's what was done last year, the year before. That should be irrelevant, what was done before. It can be a guide. But like, I mean, you always should be trying to improve and change and evolve. And talking about the GEA is built from the ground up and the local authority and local control, they are amateurs running businesses. We've said this so many times. Croke Park are professionals. You can't allow the county boards just do what they want. That's what's not working. So he's saying, of course we have a role. Well, I think, Tom, that you should have a greater role, and that should be one of your mandates, is that you should take control of this situation that is out of control.
Yeah, I sympathise a little bit with him, and especially when he's talking about coaxing and cajoling, because for him to fix what you want them to fix and fix the club fixtures, you need to have that radical change, which you can't get. Remember Pádraig Duffy was on with you last year, and he said you can't go to Congress and tell them to get rid of the provincial structure. That's not going to happen. You can't do it. And he was thinking, like, who am I pitching to here? And you do need to do an element of that as well. Yes, the club fixtures need fixed, but for Tom Ryan to do that immediately is going to be very tough, because he has to do all this other stuff.
Yeah, they do have influence. I think when they promise county boards money, they generally get what they want. Do you know what I mean? They do have influence. So on a two-tier championship, he was very political on that one. So he says, I think it's worth considering, worth looking at. Like, how more vague can you get? How about coming down off that fence? Merits of it, and merits. There's merits in it, and there's merits of a run for a weaker county. So he used the example of Carlow getting a run in the championship and how great that was, and, you know, stuff like that. So he's kind of not really going to be coming down really heavily on the two-tier championship. On Dublin funding, I thought was an interesting comment. He says there was a bit of rebalancing and we did adjust Dublin a little bit, which I thought was really funny. I've highlighted that in dark. Did adjust Dublin a little bit, but the job was always to augment funding elsewhere. So, you know, he's accepting the fact that they adjusted Dublin a little bit. That's a very nice way of saying what they actually did. On Sky, so these are kind of a lot of the big kind of, you know, burning topics that the G are being hit with at the moment.
Didn't seem to be pressed too much on an awful lot of these, just judging from the quotes that came out of
them. You wonder how open a debate it was when we weren't there. I don't really know. But on Sky, he says, I respect all views on it. Again, political. Not coming down on any real side here. But what I'd ask people to do is bear in mind that there are 140 or 150 televised matches over the course of the year, of which 14 championship games are exclusively pay-per-view. There's a little bit of perspective there in those numbers. And, like, when you look at this, like, I mean, I've never been... When Sky came on board initially, like, I wasn't up in arms about it. I was kind of a little bit excited about what they could do. Because I thought what would be sold to Sky would be the rights. There would be a Sunday game type show and you'd have a soccer AM. Like, I thought Sky would really get involved in this. But, you know, like, Sky have the Premier League. And, like, they've made the Premier League out to be the greatest thing in the world. Now, there's no broadcaster doing that for the GAA. And this is the jewel in the crown of Irish sport during the summer. Yeah. So I see RTE with the rights to most of the games. I see one Sunday game and then they're done. It's like this kind of, you know, privileged that they have it, and they have it for so long that they don't think that they need to do any more with it. They should have midweek shows, good midweek shows. They should have Saturday morning shows. They should make people think that this GAA is shutting down the country, which it does do during the summer. So for that reason, I was excited about Sky coming on board. I don't really care. It's only 14 games. And like we said, we're seeing an awful lot of league games and championship games for free. I don't have the huge issue with that. The issue I have with renewing Sky was that nobody's watching it. Like, I mean, the numbers bore out that kind of thing. So I was more critical of renewing that contract. But I do agree with him. Like, an awful lot of games are for free. I do find a little bit on that argument that this kind of entitlement that we're volunteers and we have to see the games. You are seeing most of them anyways. Like, go to see the odd game. But anyways, that I just wanted to say that on the Sky. But, like, I mean, I do think that it's disappointing Sky have only just taken the 14 games and not given us anything else out of it. You know, and from a broadcasting point of view, that is disappointing.
Like, what Sky do best is what annoys a lot of people. Like, where is the hype? Like, overhyping all these nothing games, and you watch them because you feel like you're going to miss out if you don't watch them. They should be doing, like, they should come in for the league and do that. The league is just sitting there waiting for somebody to say, this actually is important. They should be doing Monday Night Football, like we talk about all the time.
No one's hyping the GAA. No one's hyping it.
Like, everybody plays everything down. Yeah. Well, the way we do with everything in Ireland, but they're like, you know, provide the most pointless stats. Like, give us this wall-to-wall coverage every single day on Sky Sports News. Like, just hit people up the face with this thing. They have the power to do that. They've done it with the Premier League. They've turned it into the biggest league in the world. Like, you know, no matter how many times people say it's a shit league, it's still the biggest, and you still feel like you need to watch every game, even when it's Stoke and whoever on a Monday night.
No, that's true. It's that's the way it is. And, like, I mean, you just love somebody to come in and do the same for the GAA, but it's not happening. There's no Air Sport, in fairness to them, are trying to hype up club games, and they'll have three pundits at a club game, and because they're making it a big production, you would be more inclined to watch it because they're actually acting like this is really important, you know. And they do a midweek show as well with Senan and Anna Geary. So, like, they've committed to the league and their league coverage a little bit. I'd just like RT to step up their game and start putting on more shows. Then again, we have to keep saying the GAA are pretty stingy with their highlights rights. So, you know, our RT and these, but, like, I mean, you can have a magazine show without highlights. It's not dependent on highlights necessarily.
Suppose what keeps air out of the firing line is that they're showing games that aren't available. They're showing club games, they're showing, you know, all these other stuff that's like Sky are coming in and showing games that people, like, would want to watch and are available to RT to take. So they're showing four quarter final matches that people suddenly don't get to watch. Air providing extra games that weren't there.
No, we've definitely said that in the show. Just finally with Ryan, is he's talking about, we talked about this last week, is the number of games, 45 broadcast games this summer. And as Kieran Murphy rightly pointed out in the Irish Times, was that deal was done before the restructure. So the natural thing to do would be to obviously renegotiate now that we've got a brand new structure with way more high profile games to potentially renegotiate that and go, what we initially agreed with you guys has kind of changed a little bit. So let's just, it's not a radical renegotiation, it's just you might get some extra games. So we're going to stick with the in the least surprising quote from a GAA official, we're going to stick with the existing structure of things. We're happy with how the arrangement has worked up to now. We're happy with how the arrangement has worked up to now. I can't tell you how annoyed I am reading the likes of that. But that's not what it is this year. It's changed, Tom. It's changed. And we're not looking at changing the nuts and bolts of the arrangement until it comes up for renewal. So they don't want to change the nuts and bolts of the arrangement until, when is it, 2020 or 22? 22 was for 5 years. So, like, I mean, this is a problem. So this year now, there could be a load of complaints that we're missing out on big games, and next year they'll change it. Instead of them actually being a bit of proactive and going, I can see trouble down the line here, and let's just change it now. That's not the attitude in there. It's always reacting to outrage instead of actually cutting that outrage off and doing the right thing. It would just drive you up the wall.
In fairness, it probably contradicts your argument last week, talking about GAA greed.
I hope not.
But they've got an opportunity there to take all these games that aren't being shown and then go and offer this to RT, to TG Kahar, who wants these extra games that we have. They could make more money out of it. I don't know what the contract is. Maybe they can't.
Yeah.
But there are extra games here that they could sell and make more money out of. But it seems strange, not because there's money to be made, but it seems strange that they wouldn't go offer this to somebody now, because this will happen though. There's going to be big games on that will be missed and we'll all be wondering about it.
Yeah, and the Sunday, because this is another thing, and we'll move off this now in case anyone's getting bored of this. Because there's extra games and because they won't be on television, all we're going to get on the Sunday game is maybe a 2 minute package. So you're actually going to see none of that game at all, because there's going to be five or six games every Sunday. So the Sunday game is going to be a little bit hamstrung with hurling and football. Like, it's going to be like a league Sunday night.
Yeah.
So you're actually not going to see any footage of these really big games. So, like, I mean, it is going to open up a can of worms, and I can see people complaining about it. But we're going to move off the GAA officials anyways, because we all know what they're like, and they're kind of coming up through the ranks in administration. And I think Croke Park might be a little bit of an echo chamber, as in I would say they listen to this podcast if they do, or to hear stuff from it, or hear critique, and they'd say, they would probably think, what kind of nonsense are they talking, because they'd all be on the same way of thinking in there. So I don't know if that change is going to come from the GAA. Where I always say the change is going to come from is the GPA, because the GPA represents all the cash cow of the GAA, right? So this is goes without saying that when the government grants were looked for back in whenever, 2007 or whenever it was, the grassroots opposition to that, this was seen as a pathway to professionalism. There was uproar about it. There is no way in God's earth this was getting past Congress until the GPA took it upon themselves to go, excuse me, it is, or else you won't be getting any revenue. So if the GPA has the power that if they wanted to get a championship restructure in next year, they would simply send an email or a letter to the GAA and say, our members will not be fulfilling the first round league game next year until a resolution is found for this. This is the power these fellas have. And this is my frustration with these, because David Collins was on RT Radio 1 on Sunday, and on Sunday Sport, and Joanne Cantwell was interviewing him, and Damien O'Mara, and Joanne was really good as usual, and she really put it up to him. And, like, I mean, David Collins pretended he didn't know how many were on that. You know, there's key management earning over 400 grand. And Joanne asked him about that, and he sounded like a politician. Oh, well, I'm not sure about this, four or five. As if the president of the GAA doesn't know who key management is. And, like, there's only 12 staff. It's not like they've got hundreds. So, like, I mean, he came on the show trying to paint a picture of the GPA, and he's saying we should do more media and we should get ourselves out there and let the public know what we're doing and all the great work. But I've texted David twice now to come onto this show, and he hasn't replied. He's read the message and hasn't replied to either of them. So I wonder, is he going on show that he might think he might get an easier ride? Because let's be honest, RT give GAA on GAA interviews give interviewees an incredibly easy ride, with the exception of Joanne Cantwell, who's ballsy and who, like, is perfectly comfortable making the interviewee feel uncomfortable. And I thought she did a really good job with him. But, like, I mean, the GPA are the answer. And you want, I know the GPA CEO job is up for renewal. What I think the GPA need to do, right? Number one, they need to take salary cuts, because this is ridiculous. Because David Collins was saying that they pay the industry standard level to attract, you know, proper management, and this is the standard that's set, and they're just adhering to that. But they hired Dermot Early, who's not commanding that kind of a salary. He's got no experience as a CEO of an organisation, so like that doesn't really ring true that they're trying to attract the very top in that industry. But then they didn't hire the very top in that industry. They hired a fella from the army that's just got a GEA background, you know. And this is nothing against Dermot Early, who's an absolute gent, someone I like a lot, but he would have had no experience as the CEO of a company, so that doesn't really ring true. So they need to cut the wages if they want to change around this PR. What else I think the GPA need to do is they need to rebrand, and they need to call themselves the GPWA, and that's the Gaelic Players Welfare Association, right? And then they need to split, and they need to also have a GPU, Gaelic Players Union. So you've got your welfare department, which is what they have now, but you've also a separate organisation which doesn't have the link to Croke Park but retains their membership, and they work in conjunction with the CPA and try and effect change for championship restructures. How brilliant would that scenario be?
But who looks after the GPU?
The GPU, will they need to hire somebody?
I'll do that job. Are they still under the GPWA?
Yeah, they were kind of, I don't know, they have to be a kind of a splinter organisation that's not necessarily linked into the whatever agreement is between the GPA and the GEA, you know what I mean? I think they might have gave up the right to strike, for example, but I think a new union needs to be set up with a new leader that is not tied to Croke Park but still retains their membership. It's doable.
Yeah.
You get me?
So GPWA, they are still...
They stay as they are. That's the GPA.
Looking after expenses and helping people with mental health issues. And so all that, they're still doing that.
Yeah, they're
and
still
the union
doing
is doing the more proactive striking stuff that you want. Not striking stuff, but if it gets to that stage...
What a union needs to do is which it stands up against the organisation that they're representing their members against.
But I don't think you can come on, because we're making a big thing about Dermot Early coming into the GPA. And
I'm just joking about me. Like, I mean, I have a job. Do you want me to get sacked out of here for even saying that? I'm joking about me. Like, they wouldn't touch off me. He wouldn't even reply to my text messages. But he did say in that interview, he says, we're too nice. Are we too nice now that we're partner with the GEA, right? So he just kind of asked himself that question. He says, we have to be on the same page as them. We have to work with them, but we also have to be there for our players. And like, I mean, that line there, we have to be on the same page as them. You don't have to be on the same page as them. Yeah. You absolutely shouldn't be on the same page as them. That's the whole point of a union, is not to be on the same page, is to be putting it up to them. So I think they've lost their way, but I have the solution. GPWA and GPU. And the GPU works with the CPA, and then it's an everybody happy. See the way I mentioned the CPA, because they're my next story there. Well, you know, they linked
in. Go ahead, you're on a roll here.
I'm getting good with these segues into different stories. So the CPA they've surveyed their members, and I'd say the CPA are very frustrated. So there are five questions. So everybody that's a member of the CPA, I got one into my inbox and I took the survey, and everybody else should take the survey as well. So the questions that they're asking in the survey are, number one, are you happy with the organisation of club fixtures in your county? Pretty easy one. Has the entire month of April been successfully set aside for club activity in your county? That's number two. Number three is, have you received a master fixture plan with specific dates of all games for the remainder of 2018? Then number four is, would you like to see designated periods for club, inter-county, college, so that there's no overlap? That sounds like a very obvious answer. I'm sure they would. And then finally, which is very, very interesting, is the CPA has tested the systems of GA democracy over the last 18 months, culminating with our transparency motion at Congress. Are you satisfied with the continuation of this process, or is it time to escalate the situation and go a different route? So they're cranking it up a notch here. They're asking their membership whether they're going to escalate this. And like, I mean, is that leading towards a potential strike or threat of a strike? I think that's the only language that's going to work to try and get what they want.
Is there... I might be jumping the gun, but is there a bit of apathy setting in here around this, especially this time of year? Like, April, people will generally get their games anyway. The club players who we're talking about who are being represented will get to play with or without their county players. I think when it really matters most is when your championship matches are put off and you're waiting for your... It's really the elite players who struggle most. We talk about college games there, the county players who have to go off the back of that and go straight into the club. The club players are still getting their game, aren't they? So I don't know if this is the right time to do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the right time to do it. Maybe the right time to do it really was the weekend where there was club, inter-county and colleges on that same weekend. That was really strike while the iron's hot. But I suppose, I don't know, is there any good time to do it? There is still a lot of mumblings around now about players not being released for this club free April. There's given out that there's no championship games playing. There's given out that there are championship. This is just true GA style that people are not happy no matter what happens. But like, I mean, and then there's the Offaly hurlers who there's challenge games being fixed in or around training, you know, and there's managers saying they're not training, but they're playing 15 on 15 games just to try and, you know, saying we're not training. So like, I mean, it is a little bit messy in this April. I don't know, is there a good time to do it? But it'd be very interesting to see what the comeback. And you know what? It's like Aaron Kernan said on the show here before, how many people are even going to take that survey?
Yeah.
People are so lazy. Like, players are so feckin' lazy. It's unbelievable. Like, I'm not going to lie, it was sitting in my inbox for 2 days before I took it, and I eventually took it. It literally took me 60 seconds, and I was feeling a little bit put out that I was going to have to do, to do this. And this is something I feel strongly about.
It's sitting in my inbox. And
you haven't done it yet?
I'm planning on getting around to it. Like, you know, but mostly because I've played plenty of games, you know, and it's like, right, I'm happy enough at the minute that my game to training ratio is fine, like, you know,
right.
So it's not the time for me to be like, this is a joke. It's around championship time when you don't know when you're playing, and you don't know if that happens in Dublin anyway, but when you don't know when you're playing or you're losing your players, or, like, you know, or seeing
but boys. Can you not think back to a time last year where you were put out or foresee this happening again? Do you actually have to be angry at the time to actually take a survey?
See, this is like, and this is, I'm starting to rethink everything, like, you know, because obviously I've come from Derry then, who never had a problem because Derry are out in June or July, so then you play your championship then. The league runs off in Derry anyway, without or with the county players, so that's fine. So I'm just starting to think, how many counties, like, is this really affecting, or how many of them are up in arms? And maybe that's why it's not the nationwide movement that we thought it might be at the very start.
Still 20,000 members, which is, you know, which is a lot. I think, I mean, Jesus, 1,000 club players being annoyed is a lot. 20,000, you know, is an awful lot.
I'm going a long way to say why I didn't take a survey.
Yeah. Just take the survey, Conan, for God's sake. Right, this is a great story. And this is about Monaghan Club Football. And Monaghan Club Football is kind of held up as this beacon of fairness and equality, and the structures are right, and county players seem to be happy, club players seem to be happy. And it's basically an example used nationally as this is how you should do it.
Monaghan Football in general.
Monaghan Football. So they bat above their weight at the inter-county scene as well. But their club football is known. When I think of a county that runs off their championships well, I think of Monaghan, I think of Armagh, I think of Laois, I think of counties that wait until their county is out and then start their championship and run league games and have the league games set in stone and they're not changed. Because again, we talked about this before, the league in Derry means something, whereas the league in Laois doesn't mean anything. You can't, the league in Laois doesn't affect your championship status where it does in Derry. So like, I mean, again, why can't all this be the same? Every county, like, should have the same structure of a league, where I think it shouldn't affect your county championship because that puts too much pressure on county lads playing. But anyways, we won't waste time talking about that, because this, it took me ages to get my head around this as to whether this is this a good thing, is this a bad thing, what the hell is this? So every team plays 18 games, every club plays 18 games. So they're going with 9 games are going to have all their county lads, and they're going 9 games are going without the county lads. Without the county lads, a win is worth 2 points. With the county lads, a win is worth 5 points. So immediately I looked at this and I went, that's not fair. Like, I mean, Scotstown have the Hughes brothers, they have Began, they have McCarthy, they have Carey. They have a lot of county players. And I was thinking, like, I mean, sure, this is really disproportionately kind of skewed towards them. But then I stopped to think after another little while. First I was given out about this in my own head, sure, that's not right. But then I went, hang on a minute, sure, that's just their full team. So why shouldn't every team have their full team? And when every team has their full team, why not give that the priority? The most, like, I mean, the way Monaghan are going, they're 5 point games when everybody has their full team. So when every club has their full team, we're all agreed that that is the fairest time in club football, when every team has their full complement. So what Monaghan are doing is giving 5 points for when it's fairest. Mm-hmm. And then for the other nine, when every team doesn't have their full team, they're only given 2 points. So they're actually making the team, the games that when everyone doesn't have their full team, almost irrelevant, but not fully irrelevant, because they're a little bit of, you know, competitive edge to them because they're worth 2 points to you. Yeah. So I've come around from saying this is absolutely outrageously unfair and skewed towards strong teams. But then I thought, sure, the county lads coming back are club players, and that's just their full team. So, like, I mean, it's a good thing I've come down to the conclusion.
Well, you were back and forward in the office there for a while. There was about an hour and a half where you were just arguing with yourself, and after a while, people were just agreeing with you, and then you would come back to them and be like, no, that's bullshit, because we're like, I don't care, you're arguing yourself.
I couldn't get my head around it. I couldn't make head. It just was so new to me that I didn't have a good kind of train of thought on it.
It's 2 points for a draw as well with the county players, so those games that matter most, you can get 2 points for a draw.
Right.
So it's worth the same as winning without your county players. I think it is, because it's important that when teams are down county players, they're weakened, and it's like they can be punished more by servicing the county.
So people always think, that's unfair because now the games are more when everyone's back. But you're completely missing the point. It's actually unfair the other way. It's not unfair when all the county lads are back. That's when it's actually fair. Do you know what I mean? That's when the league is at its fairest.
Yeah, and like, especially then, look at all the other teams around, say, the relegation. Like, they can nick easy points off county or clubs who don't have the county players.
Yeah.
Whereas a team right beside you might be unlucky and get them an around when they do have the county players. So it's only right that they're worth more when they do have the county players, because it's obviously tougher to beat them. And I worked it out, it's like 71.5% of the points are available for that B round, as they call it, for the games with the county players.
So every team plays each other twice as well, so all the teams that don't have many county lads will still play the other teams once without their county lads. Do you know what I mean?
Which still counts for something,
and which is a very, very unfair advantage for them.
Yeah.
Do you know? And people aren't thinking about that. They're thinking that it's unfair the other way. I initially thought that it's unfair the other way, but I don't think it is. The example I was thinking of was St. Vincent's versus Ballymun, right, for example. And say Vincent's have Dear McConnelly realistically as a starter, and Ballymun have four starters. Now Vincent's are a much better club without their county lads than Ballymun, but with their county lads they're fairly even, right? Am I making sense here? So Vincent's could beat Ballymun without the county lads by 7 or 8 points, maybe, for example, because they've a much better team without stars. Then you get back in your county lads, and Ballymun might beat, say for argument's sake, Ballymun beat Vincent's by a point. Do you know what I mean? Is it fair that Vincent's only got 2 for beating Ballymun the first time, and then Ballymun get 5 for beating Vincent's the second? You know what I mean? When I was thinking of it like that, I was wondering, was it unfair? But then you have to just say, this is their two best teams.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's just the way it is.
And the 5 points are available to Vincent's if they beat Ballymun
with
the best teams.
With their best team. So you can't cry about that either, because it is your best team. And if your best team isn't good enough to beat Ballymun's best team, well, then they deserve the points.
And it's the same with Championship. Like, you both of your best teams out, and if you lose, you're out. You know, so like everyone knows in Club Championship, once it comes around to that, there's no mucking around. It's your two best teams against each other.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad we came down to something on that.
So eventually.
We've given out about Pádraig Duffy enough. That this is Pádraig Duffy's brainchild, actually, in Monaghan.
Well,
he came up with this. So, listen, Pádraig, you're an evil genius on this one. Don't give me those Super 8s. Do you know, when we keep calling this championship structure Super 8s, I like the Super 8s. I would never have thought up of the Super 8s. I think there's better structures, but I don't mind the Super 8s. But the whole year has been called Super 8s. It shouldn't be called Super 8s, because there's lots of different times of the year, and the Super 8s might be good, but the rest might be a mess.
Super 8s was going to be class at the time. I just thought, it's not going to fix anything. Like, you know, it's just making the thing a bit more exciting. But, sorry, one more point on the Monaghan thing. It's the manager must name 24 players as well, the county manager. So he'll give you the 24 players that
that's who they are
the county players. So that's really good. So you can't be saying, hang on, we've got number 33 there.
Getting
your game called off, all that stuff as well comes into it. So
And I think some people are under the misconception that if a team with a lot of county lads play a team with no county lads, and the team with no county lads win, that they only get 2 points for that. No, they'll get 5 points for that, even though they don't have, it's all county players are included in that game. Anyways, Ulster preliminary round. So the Ulster council have decided to change something, which might come as a shock to a lot of people, and for me it seems very fair and should have been done an awful lot sooner, and there's no big drama with this at all. It just seems very logical. What I don't understand is why it doesn't come in next year. This is coming in 2020, and it's very, very simple. It's just the preliminary draw. If you're drawn in that, you're excluded from it the following year. Isn't that it? So mm-hmm. that you're not getting screwed over, that you're drawn in that preliminary group year after year. Because very interesting when you're looking at the teams in the last 20 years that have been drawn in the preliminary round. So Derry have only been drawn in it twice. So like, you'll be up in arms about this change. But Fermanagh have been in it seven times. So, like, I mean, you think it's a luck of the draw. And then Cavan 6, Donegal 5, Down 4, Monaghan, Tyrone, Armagh 3. Something like that, right? So it's interesting that only four Ulster titles have been won by counties coming from the preliminary. Mm. Four ever. Now, I know it's only two of nine that are in it, so it's not like, you know, this is every year or whatever. It's only like a quarter of the teams are in it on a yearly basis. But anyway, so Cavan 1945, Armagh 2005, Donegal 2011 and 2012, and only Donegal have won the All-Ireland coming from it. So, like, I mean, I don't... like, I genuinely think this is a numbers game and think that only because only a fraction of the counties in the province are in that preliminary, it's not... I don't think it's necessarily a disadvantage. I just think that year on year, just because two are in it, it just so happens that it has been Fermanagh and Antrim or someone that wouldn't win an Ulster. You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
But it does seem very low amount of teams.
Yeah, it's
that's
a long time, like, for yeah. only four.
Yeah, it is a long time for only four, yeah.
Two up until 2011. Like, yeah, it makes sense to change it. And listen, not to bang on about how amazing Ulster is, because it's definitely standard below than what it was, but the teams are always around the same level. Like, there's rarely been a team in Ulster that's far better than everyone else. Like, you know, Dublin, for example, would just walk the Ulster Championship and it wouldn't matter if they're in the preliminary round. Whereas if you're any other team in Ulster, you're pretty much as good as everybody else. So having to go an extra round...
We must have something, but geez, like, it's only feckin' four rounds. Yeah. Like, I mean, and there's two or three weeks in between them historically. How on earth can this be such a disadvantage?
Just hard men beating the shit out of each other up there, you see.
I just don't get it. I really don't get it. We're not talking about, you know.
You don't understand, really?
No, I don't. I just don't understand up there. Maybe it's a psychological thing. But anyway, there's one man who's not happy about this change at all, even though it's completely logical and makes absolute sense, is Matty McLeanan. So Matty McLeanan says he's in the preliminary this year against Donegal. He says, even though he'll benefit from this by being excluded from next year, he says, I don't see any sense in it. There's a greater need to look at the structure of the entire championship. Take Roscommon, who we played in the Division 2 league final a few weeks ago. We're out in 3 weeks' time and would face 4 weeks' intense games to win an Ulster title. Roscommon have a few extra weeks' preparation and then they play Leitrim or New York and get to the Cannock final. Win that and they're in the Super 8. Now tell me how that's fair, Matty McLeanan says. But then I'd say to Matty McLeanan that the Ulster Council has nothing to do with all that, Matty, and that's a completely different, yeah. separate argument. And we're talking about a very logical step the Ulster Council have taken that you seem to misunderstand and see no sense in it, and then start talking about national structures.
Yeah,
have I got Matty's take on it right?
I completely agree with Matty, but it's not relevant. Like, you know, no. Ulster can't come into Connacht and say, whoa, hang on, make that harder for them. And it's completely unfair. I've written loads of pieces about this before, that they have to win four games in Ulster to get to the quarterfinal, whereas Roscommon beat Leitrim and then they've got two shots of making the Super 8s, which, like, the stakes are a lot higher now as well. You get into the elite bracket, so to say, there's more money, there's more profile involved, so that is going to irk. But yeah, Ulster are just addressing what they can address, and if, as Tom Ryan says, the GAA are going to let these things be localised and run by their local authorities, and this is all they can do to make it a bit fair.
Yeah, no, exactly. Another one I saw here today, and this is a bit of a pet peeve of mine. So Westmead manager Colin Kelly has drafted in a number of players that were not involved in the National Football League campaign. So he's brought in Dara Daly from Mullingar Shamrocks. He's brought in Stephen Gallagher from St. Lomans. He's a goalkeeper. And he's brought in, this is the one that's really kind of getting on my nerves, the Downs' Joe Moran has been rewarded for some excellent appearances for his club. Now, let me tell you something about this. And you hear managers saying all the time, well, we've an open-ended panel. The panel's not finalised at all. You know,
door's not shutting anyone.
We're not shutting the door on anyone. And you perform for your club. We'll always have a look. We'll be watching. watching you, and if you're performing at the level that will get you in, we'll bring you in. That's all grand. So what about strength and conditioning from feckin' last November until last, and then training in January and playing the pre-season games and then playing an intense league where you might go for a pint after a game and you're thrown off the panel, or you might, you know, step out of line and you're disciplined, and then you've got games for 7 of the 9 weeks during the league, and while some fella playing club might take November, December, January off, might come back, do a bit of training, get himself in good shape, and then start putting it in for 2 or 3 league games, shoot the lights out. He lands back into the squad with a crowd of lads that are absolutely getting flogged for the first 4 or 5 months of the year. It's completely wrong. If I was an intercounty manager, you are not rejoining my panel late. No way. It's not fair on everybody else. It's not fair for lads that have gone through the muck and the shit and followed the strength and conditioning programme and followed the nutrition and not stepped out of line. Some have and were disciplined, all the while someone else is off doing his own thing, enjoying his life, and then lands in late. I don't like that, and what's more, I wouldn't come into a panel late like that. I'm trying to think back, did I ever come back into a panel here now? But I wouldn't. It's not right. It's not right. And you're not in the same, it's different for the club lads from the Piershig and from Coola and, you know, all these different clubs, Nemo Rangers and Currafin. They're with their clubs, that's different. But this is, these are fellas who are just kind of, you know, off the squad, not in a club that's been winning, and just tipping away.
Yeah, and then if you're in the county panel and you've missed a session or fallen out, like you might have had a bit of back and forth with the manager at one session because you're there for so long, since October or whatever, then that's sort of held against you then as well. I would question if these boys are so good, like, unless they're young lads, like why haven't you realised that they're so good before and had them as part of your panel? And then, like, there should be some sort of line. Like, I know McGuinness would be doing this, where it's like, well, these boys need to get to the standard to play in my team.
He brought Eamon McGee back in late. Dara Daly and Gallagher, they're not young, they've been around a while. Joe Moran from the Downs, I'm not too sure about him, but like, being rewarded for some excellent appearances from the club, that's the problem I have. Like, I mean, Eamon McGee coming in that time, he came in initially, then he left the betting slip on the bookies floor and went on the beer for the weekend, and then he got thrown off it. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, they brought him back in and it ended up being a great decision and everybody seemed to be happy with it. I don't know. I think someone coming in after missing all that stuff, I think panel members can get pretty pissed off by stuff like that.
But isn't it funny, like, because this happens even at club level where managers are hounding lads from January, like, you know, get to the gym, do all this, like, send me pictures that you're in the gym. You have to, like, they're making the statement, if you don't train, you don't play, blah, blah, blah. Comes to July, August, nobody cares anymore. They're just trying to pick the best team and get them out there, and all the stuff that went before
is all bullshit.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. Yeah, like,
it's true.
And I read your piece as well this week on Tuesday, and it was about he wasn't in the Leash panel.
Who ended up playing for his club
and playing well, and then Miku plays him and tells you that because he played well for his club, whereas you didn't get the chance to play for your club.
So anyone who didn't read that, it's on Sports Joe, and this was back in 2005 when I had dropped down the pecking order of the Leash team. Even though my father was a selector that year, would you believe? But that's a whole other strand to this whole thing. But I remember going, Dublin hammered us in the Leinster semi-final, and I went to Mikko and I asked him, could I play with Port Leash in a league game? Because I didn't tell him this, but I was fed up and I was demoralised and I needed to get a game with Port Leash and score and just feel good about myself. And he told me I couldn't. And Shane Cook plays with St Mary's in Saggart, so he played in the Dublin Championship, and he was given permission, or not, don't know if it was a championship even, it could have been a league game, he was given permission and he scored something like 110. I've talked about this before. So then we played Tyrone in the qualifiers 2 weeks later, and Shane Cooks gets brought on before a lot of the subs, and
you're
of course
further down the pecking order again.
Well, I don't accept stuff like this, so I just went up and says, here, how is Shane, even though I really like Shane, it's nothing to do with it, I says, how's Shane been bumped up? He hadn't been in the reckoning at all. Like, I mean, I thought I was ahead of him in the pecking order. No, well, he played really well with his club. Like, I just walked away at that stage. It's just like ridiculous kind of carry on.
Yeah, well, that's like, and this is the thing, and like, you're one player in that situation. It was not the exact same, but somebody plays well for the club gets rewarded, where you could be doing the same thing all along as well, where county players, you're sitting number 27, could be playing for their club as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, could have. Yeah,
like
no, it is.
Your stock goes up when you're not around.
Oh, it does.
Like,
sometimes you know. It does. Yeah, it is. Not being around for a loss, suddenly you become a much better player. There's no doubt about that. But that's it. So this kind of cliche, I think a lot of the time is cliches. Well, our panel's not closed and we're still watching, lads. Don't say that kind of things. Think about who is on your squad training really hard. I don't think they need to be hearing that. I really don't. Should say you're happy with what you have, and the panel will be open again next November for anyone that wants to commit. And if you don't want to come in November and do all the hard work, well then I'm sorry, you can shoot the lights out for your club, but you're just going to be a club player. And I think that's a better way to do it, for respecting the fellas that have given you the commitment. 2018 AIB GAA Club Player Awards for Hurling. Conan, since you're our hurling correspondent, I want your thoughts on this. I've nothing to add to this outside of the fact that it's the very same as the football. We're all not too 100% sure because we wouldn't have seen all the games. It's the same thing. I'm surprised Michael Casey, cornerback for Napiershig, is down for Hurler of the Year. It's lovely to see a cornerback get into the mix there. You don't often see it. Like, I mean, it's hard to know who we're going to complain about not being on this team, because we didn't have many complaints on the football.
You don't see it. You don't know who you should
go
be.
Go on, well, you're the correspondent, so give me a report.
I can't believe you've missed this. Like, it's very obvious for any hurling fan out there. David Dempsey from the Piercy.
Yeah.
Should have been on it, wing forward.
Well, he should have been on it. He's the one that kind of sticks out, and we would have seen a lot of Napiercig's games in the Munster Club and in the All-Ireland Series, and he was very, very good. And whether he deserves to be on it ahead of Adrian Morris, Mellows, who didn't have a Connacht Club kind of championship to worry about, just had to win Galway, and I think the standard in Galway isn't quite what it used to be. There's no huge superpower like Portumna or you know, Athenry or these teams anymore.
I wasn't ready for a follow up question there. I saw one player playing well.
Do you think that you can say that and me not ask you who would he come in ahead of? Because I wasn't going to put you in that position. Although Brendan Rodgers is lucky there as well. Like, let's call a spade a spade.
He's playing in Ulster as well. It's even tougher up there.
Yeah, I suppose it is all relative. I suppose. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Right, final story of the day, Conan, is another AIB story. Actually, geez, you'd think they were sponsoring us at this stage. The amount of dimensions they're getting. Is. But this is the toughest rivalry. So what did we have last year with Camara and Stelling?
The toughest.
Anyways,
journey.
Oh, I can't think of what it was. Anyways, the toughest something. We'd be pretty sure about that. I think Dick Clark and De Boer was involved in that some way. Was he?
Probably,
I think he had something got to do with it. Anyway,
so they had to commentate anyway in the All-Ireland final. So the toughest task.
Whatever. So this is Harry Redknapp versus Vialli, Gianluca Vialli. That is, and this is the toughest rivalry. Now I don't remember Redknapp and Vialli being rivals, but apparently they played against each other 5 times, and that qualifies them to take part in this toughest rivalry. And they're going to manage Aaron's Isle in Finglas. That's going to be Vialli's managing them, and Harry Redknapp is managing Castlehaven in West Cork. Now the reason they're managing those two teams is because of the 1998 All-Ireland Club semi-final. I don't know if you remember that, but I was of the age where I remember it. This was that big rivalry back then, so that's how these two clubs have been chosen. And just reading up on that match again today, I think we'll do something next Thursday maybe with Charlie Redmond or someone, because that match was an incredible occasion. Charlie was sent off in it, and they were 6 points down and they were done, and they just completely kind of shocked Castlehaven, who had Larry Tompkins playing. So it might be a nice bit of nostalgia piece to do something next Thursday on 20 years on, there you go. So anyways, Harry Redknapp is going to manage Castlehaven. And as a surprise for everybody, I'm absolutely delighted to say Harry Redknapp has joined us on the line now to talk about this. Harry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, all right.
It's Colin Parkinson here from the GAA Hour.
All right, Willie, what's going on, mate? You all right?
Not much. How's it going?
Yeah, terrific, mate. You know, it's great to be on the podcast. You know, I'm a big fan of the show. You know, I think it's a fantastic show. You know, Conan, I can't understand a word he says, but I think he's a great addition. You know, I mean, love the show. Terrific.
Okay, come here. And so, I suppose, are you looking forward to managing in the GAA team?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, the contract got signed yesterday. You know, we're doing it for the love of the game. You know, I'm only getting the expenses, you know, being about 10 grand a week, you know, but we're going to try and get a couple of players in. You know, we're talking to Nico Grandjean. You know, we're talking to Bobby Zamora. Bobby's always good for a 2 yard tap out. And we've got Crouchy's missus, she fancies a bit of cork. And of course we've got Jamie, you know. you know, I know Jamie's at 45, but, you know, I think he's got his best years ahead of him, mate. You know, I mean, I think he's a fantastic player.
Sorry to cut you off there, Harry, but you can't make signings in the GA. That's not how it works here.
Well, I spoke to the chairman, and he said that they had money left over from the Strictly Come Dancing, and he was looking to invest, you know, in the club. So I thought he was all about players. Maybe I've got to look at the contract again. But, you know, you've got to be able to sign a couple of players, you know, come on.
Yeah, OK. Well, listen, moving on from that, Harry, what kind of football can we expect from Castlehaven?
Well, you know, I'm a bit like the lad Broly, you know, I'm a traditionalist, you know, catch and kick. You know, I'm not into the black defence like McGuinness or Mourinho. Now, I think you'd expect us to play with a 4-4-2. You know, maybe in a bit of a Christmas tree formation now and again, but I think it's going to be predominantly a 4-4-2 formation.
Right, OK. Now, it's 15 aside.
Yeah, listen, you know, you're the expert, I suppose. You know, listen, I've been managing teams a long, long time, mate, all right?
OK.
I know what works.
OK, no, I've no doubt that you do. So come here, just to finish up, Harry, are you glad you got Castlehaven? You're happy enough with that? It's a long trip down to Cork.
Well, you know, I spoke to the missus, Sandra. You know, she didn't fancy Finglas, but, you know what I mean? She said she doesn't want Jamie hanging around with that riffraff, you know. She said, you know, she see what the Dublin boys did to that little shop. She was disgusted, to be honest with you, you know. So, you know, she fancies getting a bit of sun. So I said, we go to Cork, triplet place, and, you know, I can't wait to learn the language. Fantastic.
Come here, and I know you mentioned transfers earlier. So, like, I mean, is it going to be a disadvantage for you not being able to sign players? Because we know that you're known as such a wheeler-dealer.
Listen, mate, I ain't no wheeler dealer, mate. I'm a fucking football manager, right? I tell you what, Willie, you can fuck off. It's a shit show. You can fuck off, mate, all right? Look.
Harry, okay, we're after losing Harry there. I don't know what his problem is with this wheeler dealer thing. Like, I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing Jermaine Defoe playing in Cork.
I think Cranchar is the best one, though, isn't it? He was his most loyal kind of servant. Yeah. He followed him everywhere, and Crouchy, obviously.
Am I right in thinking that Jermaine Defoe did do some sort of skills challenge in Dublin one time,
he was really good
at scoring goals in the bottom corner?
He did it with Alan Brogan. Yeah, I remember I was talking to Alan about it, so. Definitely Jermaine Defoe should be top of the list if there was a transfer market, but obviously there's not. Right, up next we're going to talk to Chrissy McCaig.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, Chrissy McCaig joins us on the line now. Chrissy, I heard on the grapevine that you're back in on the Derry squad.
Yeah, back in just in the past week there, so it's been a bit of a prolonged break, but one that I felt that I needed probably mentally as much as anything else.
Yeah, I think that was probably the thing. So you got, when did it kind of click with you that you're ready to go back in?
Well, I just thought after the club campaigns ended, and I don't even think it was anything to do with how they ended. I just thought, you know, the last probably 5 years has been literally non-stop, and I just thought if I didn't take that break, then I probably could have walked away at any stage, and that's not really what I want to do with any squad. So I just spoke to Dino McAleen, and we just agreed that after the National League that I would come back on board after that, and that's the way it's turned out.
Right, okay. So what kind of a squad have you come back into? Like, I mean, it's obviously been a bit of a disastrous start to the year for Derry.
Look, you know, it's been well documented, and you know, nowadays and the modern times, like social media, it kind of blows things almost way out of proportion. But like the fact that Derry are in Division 4, you know, I suppose it doesn't really tell too many lies. But in saying that, the squad that I'm training with now is significantly different from the squad that competed in the vast majority of the National League. You know, there's a large number of the squad now from my own club that have joined the ranks, and there's maybe three or four players that have been injured. for most of the National League that have kind of come back into. So it gives us some kind of hope. We all know that the league farm and the championship farm are often very, very different animals. So we're hoping that'll be the case this year. Obviously, it's been a bit of a downer being into Division 4 for next year. But like that's just the way it is. We just have to accept that, and we just have to try and get better.
Yeah, I spoke with Luke Connolly there on the show on Monday, and I was talking to him about the Nemo lads going back in and kind of the responsibility that you have as a successful club team to give the lads in there the kind of boost, because the Cork lads need that boost as well, and like Derry need it even more.
Yeah, look, it's another, I think it's maybe, dare I say, the landscape's maybe different for a county like Cork that have such a number of players that they could potentially choose from, but like really the GAA population in Derry is not actually as big as most people would actually think it is. But I think Derry haven't been helped. Like there's been numerous other variables that needed to be put right in Derry that has kind of affected their league position and form the last number of years. But certainly the form of Slan Neil, and then you had Ballinderry before that, it just means that you're not getting access to maybe two or three starters from each club, and it doesn't really help things. But like, you know, that's just the way it is. Like I said before, obviously you want to be doing well in the league, and for many counties, probably including Derry at this present time, the league's almost the biggest competition. But in saying that, nothing can ever get a good championship run, and it's not great that Derry are in Division 4, that's putting it lightly, but we have to try and refocus for our own Ulster Championship, and if that doesn't come, then we have to try and focus on our own the qualifiers, and we just have to be as realistic but at the same time as optimistic as possible.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways the April for clubs probably suits Derry, you know, the big kind of break between one competition. It might not suit the Galways who have got momentum, but it might suit Derry's who want to stop that kind of momentum and almost park that and start afresh.
Look, and we're just It's kind of amazing the way it is, like, because I mean I've been involved with Derry long enough now that we've came off the back of really, really good National League campaigns, getting to Division 1 finals, won in Division 2s, and it hasn't necessarily equated to a successful championship run. Now look at other, you know, like counties that have been around Division 3 and 4 and, you know, have done very, very well, have reached, you know, last 12s and last 8. So it's amazing what a championship run can do, and it's amazing how quickly it can happen. But, like, for Derry, the biggest thing over the last number of years that I feel that hasn't been put in place is just the consistency of playing with the same boys. I mean, there was some kind of survey done out recently. I think Derry are the second on the list of the number of counties that have used the most number of players. I mean, that just shouldn't be the case for a county the size of Derry. I mean, there's not that many county players in any county, never mind Derry. So getting that consistency and getting the boys playing at that level for a number of years so that you can actually build something is something that Derry are going to have to look at. And I know that's something that Demi McLean is fully aware of.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting, because we discussed Derry football a good bit after the league finished, and we're like, obviously there's been a slide similar to the way Laois slid from Division 1 all the way down, and you were in a Division 1 final not too many years ago, and you've just found yourself in Division 4, and you always find with Derry football and the analysis, and I don't know if it's tired analysis or it's these kind of myths that have been going on throughout the 90s and people are still throwing them out there, so I'm going to throw a few myths at you, things that you hear that's wrong with Derry football, and you can tell me whether this is actual, there's something in it, or it's just complete old kind of something that might have been the case years ago and it's not now. So the first one I want to throw at you is that the club football rivalry is so fierce in Derry that the county, the players, when they go in with the county, they don't get along. Is that a myth, or is there anything to it?
Nothing to that one. Again, I can give reasons for that. Like, you know, I think I used to maybe fall into that trap and think, well, maybe there is something in that. But then I go and watch other counties and other club teams, and you know that rivalry is every bit as fierce. And I think even when Derry, like maybe were, you know, maybe a top four, top five side, like traditionally in the 90s, and maybe even in the early noughties also, like, that was still thrown around, that that was the reason maybe Derry weren't maybe reaching their full potential. But I think that's common in just about every and every county. There's still that pro-cro kind of competitive edge, and it exists in Derry as well as any other county, I think.
Right, okay. Well, the other one, number two, that Derry needs an outside manager, and it's for the similar reasons that some clubs won't declare for certain managers because, again, of that rivalry.
No, I don't think that is, you know, I think the problem in Derry is that there is more of a care factor, dare I say, towards the clubs, because people in Derry are so passionate about their clubs. I don't think Derry get the same amount of support, dare I say, as other counties, because their love for their club is so, so strong. It's club first. But to me, there's nothing wrong with that mentality. But I just think then when things maybe go wrong in Derry, or you know, a few results don't go the way, then that kind of excuse is used. Well, we don't really care about supporting Derry. We're more worried about supporting our clubs. But I just think that Derry now more than ever needs some kind of run, needs some kind of success, needs some kind of something just to stop the rut, I think, to give some people and Derry belief again. Because, like, let's not make any bones about it, the last probably 3 years has been excruciatingly painful for any true Derry fan.
Right, okay. Another one is players and fans don't like travelling to Celtic Park because there's not good support there. It doesn't feel like a home venue, and you know, it's so far away from a lot of the clubs in the south of the county.
Well, I think that's one that's always been really well documented. But like, I've played in Celtic Park on numerous occasions when Derry were going well and the place was absolutely bouncing. But I still think that in all counties, and I think, you know, Monaghan have been a really good example of that too, you know, the National League game should be spread around the county or around the club scenes. I guess I think it adds that wee bit more atmosphere. I think it makes it more inclusive for clubs to get involved. And, like, you know, I think some of the National League games this year, if Derry had had them at club venues, they would have got a lot more support, and dare I say they might have been a bit more competitive in some of the games. So I do actually fall in line with that one to a certain extent. But again, that's something I feel that all counties should be trying to do if they have the county or if they have the club grounds that are capable of hosting National League games. And the facilities in Derry clubs is, you know, is unbelievable, second to none. So that's something I think Derry, yes, they have to try and look at.
Okay, right, that's an interesting one, and it's an interesting one for every county really, because they didn't really think about that yet. Especially the National League games, obviously not Championship games. This is Joe Brawley's one. So players don't want to commit because the football is too defensive.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Like, Derry's biggest problem the last number of years hasn't been that the football's too defensive. It's been, dare I say, it's been too open. The number of shootouts that, you know, the last couple of years, some of the games I've been involved in have been unbelievable games. They've almost been shown in the highlight reel in TG4 during Christmas. You know, that's a bad thing. But we keep on getting on the wrong side of them. Tipperary, we get beaten in an absolute clinker of a game. But, like, these games were absolute shootouts. There wasn't that much of a tactical almost awareness, and that comes down to as much as the players as just blaming the management. But there has been a few times where then Derry have tried to rectify being too open and almost too offensive by being too defensive, and that's where probably the critics have came about, where in reality the vast majority of the time Derry have not been defensive at all.
Right.
So, you know, I suppose you just take that one with a small pinch of salt, I think.
Okay, right. This is number five, that players are not looked after well enough by the county board, and the relationship between players and county board isn't what it should be.
Well, the county boards always get a bit of scrutiny, don't they, no matter what county you're in. Like, that's just undisputable. But what I will say is a lot of things have been blown out of proportion. I'm not in the circles to know the exact goings on with some players or some managers or whatever else. I think every county structures can improve. Derry are no different. But I think this year, I know the fixtures in Derry this year, or the last 2 years, have been really, really improved. Stephen Barker has done absolutely fantastic work on that. He's been now moved on to the Croke Park Board to help with the fixtures there, so he's doing great work. And I think at least the clubs are starting to see now some of the structures that are being put in place that do benefit everybody. Because I think no matter what type of gale you are in Derry, I think everyone that has their heart in the right place wants to see their club do well first and foremost. I have no problem with that, but I still think they want to see Derry do well. I think that was conveyed last year by the buzz that the Derry minor team created by getting to the Ulster final, winning their second Ulster title in 3 years. You know, when you see a wee bit of success for the Derry County teams, you do see people being lifted by it. Maybe people that you would have stereotyped in the past as not being the most ardent Derry fans, but when you get a bit of success, people do come out. And as I said before, I wouldn't hold it against any supporter at the minute for feeling a wee bit hard done by or a wee bit disillusioned, because Derry in the last 3 years, more maybe, haven't been as competitive or anywhere near as competitive as they should have been. You know, like last year against Mayo, yes, we were beat after extra time, but you know, there was Derry supporters in the field after that. All they wanted to see was the Derry team fighting and showing a bit of pride.
Yeah.
That was a big boost for them. So that's the kind of template we need to carry follow with.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, you know, and in fairness, that's fair, yep. Fair enough as well. Number six, and there's seven of these in total, so we're not going to keep you here all night in case you're starting to panic. Number six, there's no football in the city. That there's not enough football in the city, and we saw the initiative in Antrim in Belfast where there's a lot of money being pumped in. Is that a situation in Derry as well?
Well, I still think that until Derry can get Derry City really flowing with Gaelic footballers and Gaelic football clubs, then it's never going to reach its true potential, because like Derry City has the highest population in the county. That's quite obvious, but you know, it's always been a soccer town, and like there's so many great Gaels in the last number of years and still ongoing. Have done fantastic work in Derry City, like Steelestown have went from strength to strength, and you have a few new clubs that have popped up with their own brand new facilities. So that's going to take time, but I would certainly agree with that. Until Derry can get Derry City turned into a better functioning Gaelic footballing population, I think is maybe the right term. But again, like all cities have their challenges, and Derry City is no different. Around South Derry, where I'm from, and large pockets of North Derry, there's no more distractions of other sport. It makes life so much easier, you know.
Yeah, no, it does. Like, I mean, I suppose you have to get into the schools, and that's what that million investment in Belfast is trying to do, is get coaches into the schools try and promote Gaelic games in the schools, because that's, you know, obviously where you're going to try and turn these young fellas' heads from playing soccer to playing GAA.
And in fairness, there has been great work going on in Derry City in the last number of years, but these things take time and they take a lot of resilience, and you know, it's just about sticking at it, and you might not see the fruits of the labour for almost a decade, hopefully, but you know, there is shoots that are starting to emerge, and you know, there's, as I said, there's so many great people that are doing a lot of work, and you know, I suppose they're not being recognised, but hopefully in time they will be.
Yeah, okay, last one is the Bradleys. Paddy and Owen were and are a negative influence.
Absolute nonsense. Paddy Bradley was one of the best leaders that I ever played along with, period. And Owen Bradley was certainly one of the most talented forwards that I ever played along with. And any, you know, all these types of things, like there's so many people out there that are just so vindictive in their analysis, and you know, like they really are. But no, I can wholeheartedly say that when Derry had two forwards like Paddy and Owen Bradley, they were in a better place, irrespective of the rumours or whatever else. And I think that's shown by Derry's league position and a lot of the big results that they have got. Them two guys were on the panels.
Yeah, why does Paddy in particular get the raw deal? Probably because he's opinionated and is outspoken, and people like that obviously polarise opinion even in your own county. Because it wouldn't make sense to me why Paddy Bradley would be a negative influence on Derry football.
No, like exactly not. I think Paddy's very courageous almost in what he says, because a lot of it's very truthful, but like a lot of it's a lot of stuff that people maybe don't want to hear. But look, as I said before, and I know you've been on the receiving end of things that, you know, haven't reflected your true opinions or who you are. That's just the nature of the society we live in, and it seems to be accelerated by the presence of social media. Everybody has always had an opinion, but now their opinion is just completely widespread by the web. So
yeah,
you have to have a thick skin, and I'm sure you know that as well as anyone.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the thickness of my skin anyways. Listen, Chrissy, thanks very much for taking time for us there. Best of luck in the championship.
No problem. Pleasure, Colin. See ya.
I saw you breathing a sigh of relief there, Conan, when he said Paddy Bradley is not a negative influence on Derry football.
I don't need to rethink everything I once knew. It's mad though, like how many arguments I would have about Paddy Bradley. Like, think about that. I'm arguing Paddy Bradley's case in Derry. You know, yeah, a county with no success, you're arguing one of the few legends that have come through, because people just don't like... I don't know, people here outspoken, as he
strong
said
opinion,
like
yeah.
yourself
yeah.
as he said, but also maybe that bit of individual talent as well, like, you know, where
if you speak out against your own county, you're seen as disloyal and you're seen as being in it for yourself, you know. Even if you might be telling the truth, people don't like being criticised, and you're criticising your own, which makes it even worse. And you see it in a lot of counties.
I spoke about Paddy here a couple of weeks ago. I speak about him every couple of weeks, in fairness, but I got a couple of text messages then as well, you know, just people that are like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's crazy, like, just people who don't know him either, like, you know, some people just think he must be a bad influence on the dressing room.
Any of Chrissy's answers surprise you there, or was it kind of stuff that's known in Derry? But people, I always think the club rivalry one, because this has been spun for so long, and then you have a situation where, like, Philly McMahon and Dear McConnelly have fought each other in club football.
Yeah,
like, I mean, you will have that. Now, you don't want it spiralling out of control, but, like, I mean, you'll have an awful lot of trash talking between county fellas once it doesn't go to a level which is disrespectful, and then it gets dragged in. But every county has mad rivalries, and they should have. But every county should be treated as a club as well. You know what I mean? If your county team isn't seen as a club, well, then you've probably got problems.
Well, he made a point that was sort of almost contradicted. It didn't really agree with him. He said people care. It was actually the second one you asked him then. Like, you know, does it...
It was the outside manager.
Yeah, so people care.
You see,
more...
In fairness to Chrissy on that one, at the moment, the Derry senior manager is a Derry man. So that was probably the most difficult one for him to answer. Because, like, what's he supposed to say there?
Yeah.
If he says we need an outside manager, he's saying the manager which I'm going to play under is not the right... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, should I have even left that one in
at
all?
No, because I was listening to him and thinking, originally he made the point that you go to any... Like, go down to Tyrone, which is right beside Derry. Like, you see some of the fights and the rivalry there. Like, and county players fighting each other.
That's one of the worst counties, all right.
Yeah, so I agreed with that when he was saying that. But then when he said that people in Derry... They do seem to care a bit more about the clubs than it is club first. I also agree with that. And maybe it's not that the players don't like each other, but there is still a bit of an apathy. Derry aren't a well-supported county, like, and it is just that people just involve in their clubs more than their county. Like, nobody puts county first in Derry.
Yeah.
Like, I went to Donegal one time, and this club who had no players on the county panel, this is under the McGuinness era, they were doing a fundraiser for Donegal training expenses. Like, I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, if our club did any fundraiser, nobody in Derry would be seeing anything of that. Like,
yeah.
But this club here, nobody in the panel were raising money for training expenses.
Just a goodwill. And maybe it's just this leader that Jim McGuinness was able to just get everybody together. And, you know, that's just the power that he has as an inspirational type of figure. Anyways, we're going to have to leave it there. Just before we go, just to let you know that Ayr Sport have two games on Saturday, which is Kilmallock versus Ballybrown. I wonder, do everybody notice my watch beeping on the hour? I can't fix it, so you're just going to have to be stuck with it.
Can I say, and it's Kilmallock? You know, if you're going to talk about hurling.
No, it's Kilmallock, buddy.
I took a shot.
Listen, buddy, I've been doing that hurling show a long time. Patrickswell versus Adair as well is on Ayr Sport, and then TG Cahir on Sunday has an Napiershig versus Doon. Napiershig are obviously back out not long after losing an All-Ireland Club final, and Castlegar versus Liam Mellows in the Galway Championship. So they're on Sunday, so that's what we have to look forward to at the weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. Right, good luck.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.